All right, I did a deep analytics dive after the Twins struck out 15 times on opening day, and I've calculated it all out. If they continue to strike out at this rate, they will strike out 1 billion times this season. I think I'm half kidding. Let's get into strikeouts, the early season, the first six games, the injuries, and where this team is headed here. On Chin Music, this is our Twins and Baseball show at TalkNorth.com. The lineup is Roy Smalley, former Twins star, current Twins broadcaster, Lavelle E. Neal III, Star Tribune columnist. I'm Jim Suhan, also from Star Tribune. Brandon Morton is our longtime producer. We're coming to you from the Aquarius Home Services studios, and we want to thank Aquarius Home Services and your boat club. Also tell you about my friend Scott Dayton at Twill a little bit later in the show. Thanks to everyone who listens. The best way to listen is to subscribe to your favorite podcast app. It's free. It's the easiest way to listen. Also check out our great shows on hockey, basketball, prep sports, the Vikings, everything else. We do appreciate you listening. We also have Mike Grimm on the Go Gopher podcast. All right, gentlemen. So we're going to talk about a lot of other things, but we might as well talk about the strikeouts. This team struck out a lot last year. It didn't really hamper them the second half of the year as they put up tremendous numbers. It seemed to hamper them a little bit against the Astros in the playoffs. And then, of course, yesterday, they both went over 15. They had 15 strikeouts. They also went over 12 with runners in scoring position. Roy, what's your level of concern with strikeouts, and does it bother you aesthetically to watch them?
Second part first. I really don't like it. It's hard for me to watch. And as far as just the strikeouts mean, I mean, there's a lot to unpack here in the. After watching the first six games, I mean, there's a lot, and we've got a lot to talk about today. But the strikeouts before yesterday, the strikeouts were bothering me, and the reason they were bothering me is because, I mean, this team is built on hitting the ball out of the ballpark, and they're willing to be okay with the guys are going to strike out. You know, it's just another way to make an out, and guys are going to hit the ball out of the ballpark, and it'll be okay. I don't think it's okay because you can't. I mean, you just will not get the ability to hit well with have the runners in scoring position averages good enough if you strike out that much. It's just. That's the first place where that will show up because you've got a lineup of nine guys, all of whom will strike out, some a lot more than others, but all of them too much. And, you know, when they're not hitting the ball out of the ballpark, but they claw guys into scoring position, you got to get them in. And especially with a runner on third and less than two out. And I don't know how many times we saw a runner on third with less than two out, and the guy up there with one out struck out. But it was a lot for six games, and that's the problem. It's not so much the strikeouts, which it is, but the fact that there's no change in approach when you got to get a run in. I'm going to pick on Byron Buxton here, I don't want to pick on him, but just as an example, swinging and missing a two-strike slider badly for strike three with a runner on third, less than two out, means that not necessarily trying to hit the ball in the ballpark to his pull field, but his sights are still set on, I'm going to get a fastball, I'm going to hit it to my pull field, and swings at the first thing he sees, and it's a slider away, instead of, I'm going to look for the ball out over the plate. I'm going to hit it to center field. Just get this run in. And if I get beat on a fastball inside, I get beat. But the chances are I'm going to get something in this at bat out over the plate, and I can just hit the ball to center field and get the run in. And then what happens is when someone hangs a slider and have that approach, then you might get the three-run home run or the two-run home run. But that's the problem that I see is – is that they're built for home runs and strikeouts, and it's really hard and they need everybody in the lineup. There's not a bona fide 300 hitter in the lineup, and they're going to hit anywhere from 240 to 280 and hit a lot of home runs, and that batting average is going to be difficult to drive in enough runs when you're not hitting the ball out of the ballpark when you strike out that much. Whew, sorry, there's a lot there.
That's good stuff. And you also opened the door for some other conversations. Lavelle, your thoughts?
First of all, I have to relay the quote of the day in the press box is when Patrick Racy yelled, "How do you strike out 15 times without Joey Gallo in the lineup?"
Honestly, listen, you guys know I love baseball in general, right? But there are also days, we all know, where you show up at the ballpark and you just watch nothing happen. And I was watching the Twins lineup yesterday, and I was sitting there, and I swear to God, Lavelle, I turned to either you or Bobby or Phil and said, you know, look, Royce is the only entertaining thing about this game.
I know. Absolutely. Yeah. And the frustrating thing is that, Roy is right about the Bucks in the bat. You know, when they had the bases loaded and Bybee on the ropes there, and they just needed someone to touch the ball in that situation. You know, it just touched the ball. You're probably going to score a run and maybe more than that. And that just didn't happen. So I remember I told Royce in the press box that this reminds me of the first half of the season last year when they would get into threatening situations and he just didn't get the professional at bat that's needed in order to drive in a run. I'm not fretting about the 15 strikeouts that much. Although I think it was 15, actually it was 15 times last year in which they struck out at least 15 times. But the bat in zero with runners in scoring position is more troubling to me. Because good teams execute in those situations. That's like a power play in hockey. You know, you convert there. And good teams do that. And not seeing that with healthy guys like Buxton and Correa in the lineup, you know, that was really eye-opening to me yesterday. So it was just a lack of professional. And look what happened when Cleveland finally got to Pablo Lopez. I think it was a single, and then a single that sent the runner to third. And Jose Ramirez, be damned, I'm not making it out here. And he kept a bat alive. I think it was an 0-2, a 1-2 pitch, and he hit it hard to right center field for an RBI single. And that kind of opened things up for Cleveland. When they got in that situation, they did not screw it up. The Twins were in that situation with 12 times and screwed it up. So, just touching the ball, man. Good things happen when you just put the bat on the ball.
Yeah, but Lavelle, what you just said is the problem. Yeah, they're taking the position, and you're taking the position that the 15 strikeouts don't bother you. They are not going to get guys in if they strike out 15 times a game. It's not going to happen because they're just the next hitter away from a strikeout. Because they're all in the same boat. And so I agree with you that the strikeouts are not troubling in and of themselves. But the reason that they're striking out is because they will not change their approach. And that's the problem. Where they're all pull field guys from the word go, and they have the inability, I think, psychologically, mentally, internally, they have an inability to change their approach from the launch angle swings that they've developed. And I've even talked with some of the Twins, brain trust in the clubhouse, and I've been told, look, Roy, it's different than when you played. These guys throw harder. These pitchers throw harder. They've got all this stuff. You know, guys have to be able to develop these kinds of swings to be able to catch up with the fastballs and do this, this and that. And so you can't really ask them, to change that, because this is what they have worked so hard to, get to the point where they can hit this great stuff that's on, coming from all the pitchers. And I mean, if that's the case, if you can't ask them to say, you know what, with a guy on third and less than two out, please figure out a way to not be fooled by breaking balls and just hit loft a fly ball to center. Please figure out a way to do that. If they had done that, if they had gotten in every guy that was on third base with less than two out in the first six games, I believe that the outcomes of the games would have been different. And so that's the problem that I have, is this inability to change the approach. The ball that the base hit that Ramirez got was a six breaking balls in a row at bat that he finally and admittedly hit a great pitch, a little sweeper out on the out
down, low down and away
off the plate.
Yep.
And you know why was he able to do that? A, he's a great hitter. B, he's seen six of them in a row. And he was saying, you know what? I'm not going to get fooled by that pitch. If he throws a fastball, he's probably beat. But he trusts himself to at least touch a fastball. He was not going to be way out in front of another breaking ball on the sixth consecutive one that he saw. And it's the approach rather than the talent that allows people to have productive at-bats with guys in scoring position.
Well said. And we're going to keep talking about this all year. It's going to be really interesting to see if they do make any adjustments, because second half last year, they did get somewhat better. They still struck out a lot, but it seemed like they were much better with runners in scoring position. I ended up writing on opening day about a guy who didn't play. I've never done that before, and I've been covering baseball since 1993. This is kind of illogical, but this lineup just doesn't look the same to me without Royce Lewis in it. And I know he's a young player. I know he still has a lot to prove. I know he strikes out every once in a while too. But man, I just don't like the middle of the order hitters feel like they're a little out of place on this team. Lavelle, what do you think?
I agree. And the reason, because I asked Rocco before the game about his best cleanup hitter. Because I often think about what Roy has said multiple times on this show about trying to fabricate a lineup without a Nelson Cruz in it, without a guy you could put in a 3-4 spot who is a consistent run producer. I like to call them bus drivers, because the bus drivers drive in the bus riders. And you know how difficult it is. So that's why I asked Rocco that question. I said, who are your guys? And he comes out and says, Royce Lewis, a guy who has barely a half season of major league experience. And I thought that was an incredible thing to say, given the people like Buxton and Correa and others that they have on that roster. So, yeah. And it's in every way imaginable, when Royce Lewis is not part of the equation, that there's less pizzazz in the clubhouse. There's less pizzazz in the dugout, less pizzazz in the field, less pizzazz in the lineup. You know, it's amazing that one person with that amount of experience can have that effect on the team. But yeah, when Royce is in that lineup, I think everybody's thinking he's going to do something good today to help this team win. So when he's out, you know, they're missing that. They're lacking that. And it's rather remarkable that he's got that status, but he's proven it. You know, I would have rather seen Royce Lewis up with the bases loaded than Byron Buxton. You know, and Buxton's a former All-Star. Bucks has been in the league like 7-8 years. And here I'm putting Royce in front of Buck in that situation. So it is very, very odd, but it's the reality too.
Right?
Yeah, I agree with everything that you say, Lavelle. It is amazing that Royce Lewis is the guy. But and here's why I think that he is and will continue to be. You know, besides all the intangibles about the pizzazz, which are all significant and important. But the thing that I've seen from Royce Lewis so far is that in big situations, he doesn't, if he gets a pitch that he ought to hit, he hits it. And the problem with the rest of the lineup is they get themselves to two strikes. They're not good two-strike hitters for the most part, and they get themselves to two strikes by missing a pitch early in the count that should have closed the deal for them. And so we see a lot of fastball down the middle to Buck, where he either takes it or he fouls it back. And then now he's in a hole and they throw him breaking balls. Same way with Kepler. You see a lot of swing and miss or foul ball or pop up a fastball down the middle. And again, I'm not picking on guys. By the end of the season, all these guys could get hot enough during the course of the year to really have nice years. But, they did it in the second half of the season last year. But they have not really gotten – they don't really have anybody that's, as I said, a bona fide 300 hitter or a bona fide 100 RBI guy. I mean, you've got nice hitters that strike out a lot that are going to do some really big things. And Buck is one of them, and Correa is one of them. And, Kepler, hopefully will figure it out, or at least have a half a season again like he did a half season last year. But you've got guys that, the middle of the order is, you shake your head because nobody has shown that they're that third place or fourth place hitter. Nobody's shown that they can drive in 100 runs, even and projected, take a streak and say, well, if you project this out over the course of a season. So it's without Royce Lewis, they need all the nine guys that they have that they're regular, that are going to be the regular lineup on a given day. They need everybody because everybody's going to strike out. So they need everybody else. And it's just a number, it's arithmetic. They need everybody, doing to the better part of their range of outcomes, rather than the lower part of the range. And there's going to be streaks like this. Just all these things we're talking about means there's going to be streaks where they just don't score any runs. And that's why I said the last couple of weeks, when we were talking about this team getting ready to open up, and that's why I said I put it on the offense, not on the pitching staff. And I think the first six games have borne that out. I think they're going to pitch. And it's up to the lineup to score runs. I mean, they got to Pablo Lopez. Yeah, they got to him three runs in six innings or 5 2/3, and they didn't hit the ball really hard. He didn't have his best stuff, and I thought his performance or his outing yesterday was more about pitch selection, like six breaking balls in a row to Jose Ramirez, rather than any way that he really pitched badly. So I go back to, I think the first six games is a microcosm of it's on the offense, not on the pitching staff.
I think it's rather interesting that we're all talking about this offense when it was 10th in the league in runs scored last year.
Right. Yeah, I've always wondered about that. I wondered why we were so convinced. I guess 10th in the league is great, but there's going to be a lot of these streaks, and without a stud in the middle of it, there's going to be a lot of streaks where they score two.
All right, more on that. More on some. We're also going to talk about some pitching here. We do want to tell you we're coming from the Aquarius Home Services Studios. We want to thank Aquarius Home Services.
Since winter was spring, I guess that means spring will be summer?
Yes, our hot, muggy weather will be here soon.
Scott for Aquarius Home Services.
Now is the time to schedule your AC tune-up.
And for a limited time, enjoy 50% off the regular price.
From tune-ups and repairs to new system installations, you'll enjoy amazing professional service and no surprise upfront pricing. For a worry-free AC, visit AquariusHomeServices.com today. Aquarius, earning the right to be recommended.
Thanks also to one of our newer sponsors on the network, Your Boat Club.
Got the winter blues? Start planning your summer. Plan on fun and get out in the water with Your Boat Club. Your Boat Club offers boat club memberships and daily rentals with access to over 40 bodies of water and over 400 brand new boats to enjoy. Whether you want to cruise on a pontoon, create waves in a speedboat, or reel in a big one on a fishing boat, Your Boat Club has got you covered. Unlimited boating memberships are available now, starting at just $1.99 a month after a one-time initiation. Life is better on the water. Find out more today at yourboatclub.com.
I want to let you know my friend Scott Dayton at Twill in the Dining Galleria, twillmn.com. They just had a Samuelson trunk show on Thursday, April 12th and 13th, they're going to have their signature Peter Millar event. Their Peter Millar Crown Shop is absolutely loaded with fresh new merch. Go check it out. April 26th to 27th, they're going to have their Johnny O spring event. I wear a lot of Peter Millar. I wear a lot of Johnny O. Go check it out and tell Scott we sent you. All right, let's get to I try to self-scout, guys. I know one of my flaws is I get excited about talented young players, and I am capable of overrating them at times. I really thought this is going to be a great year for Matt Wallner. He looks lost. How concerned are you? Let's start with Roy on this one.
Yeah, I was concerned last year, and you guys know we've talked about this on this show. There are just so many fastballs down the middle of these swings and misses. And you can't hit in the big league. It's too hard. I mean, if you get a pitch that you hit and you're consistently not hitting it, I think that we are really impressed, rightly so, with how far he can hit the ball. I mean, that's just awesome. But the thing that has always worried me about him is that he misses a lot of pitches in the middle of the plate that early in counts, and he needs to, it's too hard to hit in the big leagues if you don't hit those. And my own personal feeling is, I talked with Paul Molitor about this on the radio last year, and Paulie wasn't sure. I mean, and I'm not going to argue with Paul about hitting mechanics, of all people, about hitting mechanics. He knows about it as much as anybody. But I look at, because I did this. My stride was in toward the plate an awful lot in my career, and it ties you up. It's not just, they say you can't get to the inside pitch because you can't get your hips out of the way. It's not just that. It's you don't get the big end of the bat when you step in at the plate. The barrel gets below the hands too much, and he starts open and then closes up and strides in at the plate, and it immediately gives a half again longer a longer arc of the big end of the bat. I mean, just automatically, that's my fervent belief, having been a guy that battled that. And I think that he has talent enough to be what you think he's going to be, Jim. I just think that there's some little mechanical thing that he needs to fix to allow him, to clear and get the big end through the zone easier. He's working so hard. And Kepler's a little bit the same way. When Kepler's swinging the bat, you guys mentioned last year, you will remember last year that I mentioned that Kepler had the really good second half. And it looked to me like squared up his stride away from more square to the line of flight of the ball rather than in at the plate. And I don't know if I'm right about that, but with Wallner, but I think I am.
The week I was down in spring training was the first day the Twins were on the road and Wallner was in the lineup, and they pulled Wallner out of the traveling party to take him into the cage and work on some stuff because he was looking bad in spring training. And it had something to do, it did have something to do with his stride and his approach to the ball and tying himself up. So, and it looked like he had some success with the adjustment he made in spring training later in camp. But yesterday, watching him looked like he was back in that box again. So, and it's got to be hard because, I mean, he's such a big guy. He's about 6'5", and he's got, he looks like he's big enough to be able to stand him outside of the batter's box in the back line and on the first baseline side. But then his first movement is to come in toward the plate. And I think he still gets boxed in. And so it looks like something that's going to have to be a work in progress with him during the season. It's unfortunate because I was hoping he would take another step. I always thought he was a Joey Gallo with better ball the bat skills, and not the ridiculously high strikeouts. So, this is something that bears watching immediately. Their options are a little limited. I mean, unless they want to put out Austin Martin in left and have him figure out some things. Larnick is on the IL right now, so he's unavailable. I'd like to see Wallner figure out a way to stick in the lineup. I think he could do a lot of damage there and be a guy who could really solidify, that sixth or seventh spot in the batting order. But right now, it just looks like there's a mechanical adjustment. Well, maybe it's leg kick or stride that he needs to make that gives him a better chance of getting to the baseball.
Man, we have gone deep on hitting and we've just gotten started here. This is fascinating stuff. Let's you know what? We'll save pitching for next week or the week following. Right now, let's just keep talking about hitters and hitting. I've always said that my amateur view of Byron Buxton as a hitter is he's more of a feel hitter than a scientific hitter. And that's why he can get on a roll and start feeling good. And he doesn't miss that first fastball down the middle. But he, you know, he's not necessarily going to strategize his way out of slump. He's just got to feel good and hit a couple balls hard and feel good about it. But that's an amateur's view. Roy, what do you see in Buxton? And after last year where he was a terrible DH, do we have reason to believe he's going to break out this year?
I think he will. I think he's got too much talent. So it's going to be, for him, it's just going to be a question of playing every day. And he'll get in a, Buxton groove at some point in time. And I think potentially be the all-star center fielder again this year if he stays healthy. He's got issues with his swing, just like everybody does, but he has so much talent and he has so much bat speed that he will find his comfort zone, I think, and be a typical buck. I would personally wish that, as I've said with all of them, I personally wish that they would, you know, adjust their approach at the plate in one of two ways. When they're not feeling good, forget about, you know, when everything's not exactly right, then forget about the pitch from the middle end, inside third of the plate, maybe inside quarter of the plate, right in the corner. I mean, the only way you hit that pitch is to get the bat head out in front, and it causes anxiety, and you swing it at the first thing you see and all that stuff. When you're not feeling great, look for the ball out over the plate, try to hit it to the opposite gap, and you'll be amazed at how many hanging breaking balls that you hit exactly the way you want to hit them, and not to the opposite gap necessarily, but a long way to your pull field. And you'll get a fastball on the outside part of the plate, and you'll hit that ball to center and right center and get some hits. So that's one way, and that's the two strike approach that I wish that they would have more often. With Buck, he's got so much talent. I just wish that his sights weren't set on making contact with a fastball so far out in front of him, because it hurts him early in counts. He'll swing at a bad pitch, and everybody does this. I did it. I mean, everybody does this, but it's that, what approach are you going to have to not do that? And are you just going to wait until you feel good, you know, just make outs until you click again? Or are you going to try to do something else? The other something else is that I wish they would do, if you don't want to do that, change your approach, then work really hard on figuring out, and be willing to be wrong occasionally, but work really hard on figuring out, what is this guy going to get me out with? Try to get me out with the most. Where am I most vulnerable? And if that's the slider or sweeper or whatever it is, then step in the box when there's no balls and no strikes, and look for that thing and stay on it until you get two strikes. And if you get it, kill it, because you know it's coming. In your mind, you know it's coming. And all you have to do is once or twice just really wreck a pitcher's day by hitting that breaking ball that they think that they can get you out with. And boy, here is going to come a whole bunch of fastballs. You can switch right back and hit what you want. But one of two things, I know this part of my personality, but it's also, I think, the right way is just don't beat your head against the wall. Figure out a way to get yourself some hits when you're not perfect with your mechanics or things aren't feeling exactly right. Do something else for a little while, and that will. I mean, Ted Williams, the greatest hitter of all time, arguably. He told me one time, and he's written about this, but he told me specifically. So, when I wasn't feeling good, I choked up on the bat, and I got up on the plate, and I tried to hit the pitcher in the forehead with line drives. I just tried to hit it, ram the ball right back through the middle. Well. I always kind of felt like, you know, if that was good enough for Ted, I guess it's good enough for me.
All right. We're going to wrap up this hitting clinic with Lavelle's thoughts.
Everything that Alex Kirilloff is doing right now, Buxton is totally capable of doing. The fact that Kirilloff has more triples than Buxton is weird and shocking at this point. But I would like to think that Buck's going to pass Kirilloff eventually. It does look like it just seems like Buck's fallen behind 0-2 a lot already, 1-2, and he hasn't shown much of a two-strike approach. And I know that he's definitely a field hitter. Carlos Correa has tried to approach Buck about analytics and showing them a few things, and Buck has looked at them, but I don't know if he totally embraces it or not. To Jim's point, I think Buck just gets in the box and tries to see a pitch and react to it and doesn't worry about what to be looking for in certain counts or what side of the plate he should be looking at. I can't blame him because we've seen how he hits when it works. He gets on stretches where, you know, he's piling up the total bases and he's driving in runs and he's carrying the team. And, you know, that very well could start, you know, tomorrow against Cleveland. But it just doesn't look good right now. I'd be honest with you. I'm just happy to see him in the outfield and seeing him play as a center fielder and get in the batter's box. Cause I know he feels like he's back to normal and eventually, you know, his game will probably come back. As you know, we saw what it looked like last year when he was just a DH and it was not pretty at all. So I got to imagine him being in better spirits and being more positive about just being able to help the team in the field as well as at the plate is going to translate to better things at the plate for him. So, and that's fine. If he's a field hitter, you know, it's hard to change him at this point of his career. You know, maybe Correa will continue to try to show him some stats to help him out here and there, but you know, he definitely has the ability. And I'm not going to panic over, you know, what's gone on the first couple weeks of the season.
No panic at all. Too much talent. It's tough to watch him go through that. And there are a lot of things that I think you look at that talent and with a lot of guys on this team, same way you look at the talent that they have to hit and say, man, consider doing a couple of other things. You know, you don't have to change your total swing mechanics. Just consider doing approach wise, consider doing a couple of other things. And Jim, I know you want to wrap this up, but I'm going to tease pitching.
No, you know what? No rush. Just go ahead and tell me what you think.
No, I'm just going to tease pitching. Joe Ryan, wow. That's my tease. Wow. Mm. Different secondary pitches, totally different. Really encouraging. Louis Varland, that stuff plays. That will play. He was secondary pitches better than we've seen before. His problem the other day in Milwaukee was just not quite location wise. The stuff was good. He just couldn't quite get it close enough to that outside corner he was shooting at, get guys to chase it. And he got behind some guys and had to come in. But I was encouraged there. Same thing with Paddock. That stuff played, man. And the problem that they had was location. It was execution of location and not – I just don't think that stuff's good enough. Secondary pitch stuff's good enough. So that's it. Tease. I want to talk about that. A lot to unpack there.
Good. Next week, the gentleman will talk about pitching. Thanks for listening to our strikeout talk today. Appreciate it. Once again, thank you to Aquarius Home Services and your boat club. And thanks to our producer, Brandon Morton. We'll talk to you next week.